You'd stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Call the roll, please.
Chairman John Sorgenfeld?
Here.
Vice Chairman Ted Aaron?
Here.
Commissioner Bradford Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner
Lothburn?
Here.
And Commissioner
Ford? Here. Thank you. Do we have a motion to accept tonight's agenda?
So moved.
I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The next on our agenda is the approval of minutes for October 11th and October 25th of 2005. Have the commissioners had an opportunity to review those or any changes?
I have a change.
Okay.
On page 35 of the minutes for Tuesday, October 11th, the voting record, it states that the motion was denied by voice vote 4-1, and I think that was 3-2. It was 3-2.
It was.
The motion was...
Who is for and who is against?
Both I and John were against the motion, and Ted...
Very well.
All right, if you're comfortable with that.
Oh, I'm fine with it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I trust you guys.
Okay. Any other changes? Yes.
The October 11th minutes, page 2, next to last paragraph, it's quoting me, and the minutes clerk has always did a fantastic job. The last sentence says, he said this sounded real intelligent, and that is what I said, but I said it in jest, and it would be inappropriate to ask the minutes clerk to make those sort of comments, so I would just ask that you strike that last sentence.
Okay.
So would we vote then separately, Mr. Chairman, on...
Sure, we can do
I'll
that.
Vote to approve. Thank you.
Okay. Let's first have a motion to accept... let's have a vote to accept October 11th, 2005 minutes.
Mr. Chairman... Go ahead. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the minutes for October 11th, 2005.
All those...
As amended.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Is there a second?
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the next set is October 25th, 2005. I'll make a motion that we approve those minutes with changes. And I guess Commissioner Burns will abstain since he was not present.
I will second that
those.
Motion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Actually, I was present. I just haven't
right,
had a chance,
had a
to,
chance
review.
To review them. Correct.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is for the public comment period. This is a time for the public to speak on any item that's not on our agenda tonight. If you'd like to address the commission on something that is not on our agenda, you can come forward now. Anyone like to do that? Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Paul Sacco, 871 Merced Street. I can't let you go by without some public comment. This is maybe off the wall, but during your hearings, you get a lot of requests for development and from the planning, and in that regard, there are requests for variances. Can I be given is there a summation of the requests for variances, and then how many are granted during the year, and for what type, such as... I know I hear a lot of comment that setbacks are given rather readily, side variances are given readily. I've listened to this, and I'd like to get the distribution of this so I can analyze it for the future.
Well, I think first what might be appropriate is there's three findings that we need to make when we make a variance. Who wants to tell us what those three are?
No, I understand what they are.
Well, I mean, you said they're readily made, and they're not really readily made. I mean, they're
made. Well, I know that's a matter of interpretation, and I agree with what you're saying. I'm not arguing here to argue on at this point.
Okay.
But I'd like to get the distribution of the variances that are granted during a year.
Okay. We have a request for information form. And if you'd want to come to our department and fill one, you could even go to the city clerk's office.
I will do that. I've done that in the past.
And she'll get it to us, and we have there's a 10-day working day response.
Okay, I've done that in the past. Now I have a may I comment on a different situation? About a year ago, I came here and asked for a discussion on a tree ordinance, the obstruction of views in established neighborhoods. And this is a common thing. And some people expressed an interest in it at the time. And I said, why should a tree have a better view of the city and the ocean than people? And as everybody nodded their heads, and I agree, it's not an easy solution, but is there anything that can be done with internally to start addressing this? Can an arbitration committee be set up where people can go to having this addressed? Anyway, I'm asking for something in this area to be done a little bit more formally.
Okay.
Please consider that.
Let me, while you're still up there, let me ask a question. So is this something that the council would do, or is this something the
Planning
Commission
could
do?
Actually, I believe the council is going to bring this up in a hearing in the near future to discuss it. And when you go to the city clerk's office to get your request form, you're going to want to ask her if they have an agenda set for November 15th. It may be on that agenda. I'm not sure.
Okay, I will do that. I appreciate that.
Sure. And if you run into a problem where you mentioned that you'd made this request before, come back and let us know. That's what we're here for, so we'll make sure that you get the information you need.
I had a call with one of our council members earlier this evening, and it sounded to me like that particular member had this tree thing very high on their priority list.
I hope so, and I will follow through on that, and I appreciate all your comments on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's very high on my agenda, too.
And I know you were the one that was very positive at my last comment last November. So here, another year has gone by, and I guess that's a short time. I know there is an existing ordinance in the city for new development where it's 15 feet is the height, I believe, and 6 feet on side yards. So, which means that is not higher than a typical.
I don't think that's accurate. I know what we have been able to do, and I think this actually came up when you were before us before. I think I made this comment that when we look at new developments, there have been situations where, as part of the conditions of approval, that the trees don't go any higher than, say, the roof line. We have done that when we're just at the beginning. But let me get, are you familiar with
No, we don't have an ordinance in place. Any review you have of new development, though, is discretionary.
Right.
And you review the landscape plan as well.
Sometimes there are certain neighborhoods that have CC&Rs that have restrictions,
right.
And frankly, they're not enforced well or they're very difficult to enforce.
Yeah. Well, rooftop would certainly be acceptable. Yeah.
I was going to say, if we're going to discuss this, that ought to be an agendized item.
That's
okay?
Correct.
I would like to see the staff, Mr. Chairman, bring it back to this commission if the city council does not do anything on this particular project.
Let me ask a question first. Do we have the authority to create an ordinance, or is that the city council?
That's the city council. They would provide you direction to look at an issue.
But we could get it written by staff if all of
I think procedurally what you would do is you would advise the council that you've received a request and that you would recommend that they direct you to look at it and evaluate it and do all the research. If they would decline to do that, then I think you'd have your answer.
But it sounds like that they're already going to do that. Is that
I don't know to the extent of which they're going to discuss it, but I do know it will be upcoming in the near future.
Well, why don't we do this? Let's direct staff to come back to the Planning Commission and update us once they've found out what
absolutely.
The council's planning to do. And if the council isn't planning to do it, then we could go ahead and make a recommendation that we look at to study that.
I appreciate that.
That will take care of my concerns, Mr. Chairman.
What's that?
That will take
okay.
care of my Good. Concerns, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Okay. The first item tonight is under business items, and this is a conceptual review at 331 Wadsworth. And this is application number 050177, conceptual review for mixed-use residential commercial project on 1.74 acres consisting of 8,000 square feet of retail commercial space located along the Price Street frontage and 48 residential townhouse units, including a possible 10 flex space units. The units are three stories in height, arranged 2, 4, and 5 unit alignments with an underground parking garage that includes approximately 172 parking spaces. and Scott Graham. This basically tonight, we're just to review and provide comment. We're not taking any action on this item. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there's some few issues that I pointed out in the staff report that I'd like to go over with the commission related to maybe interpretations that I would like the commission to provide comment on.
Okay.
And that would give specific direction really to the applicant about certain development standards that they'll be held to or won't be held to. As I stated, it's a mixed-use development. You know, you have commercial on the frontage on Price Street, about 8,000 square foot at the ground floor, allocated in two separate buildings. Above each of those structures, you're going to have eight residential units. And then there are 40 other residential units, including the 10 flex space units over the remainder of the site. The site's broken up in a kind of a clustered arrangement. Again, units are connected in two, four and five unit arrangements. The project has underground parking, an internal pathway that connects the individual units together and to the outside. There's a community building that's provided in the design as well. The kind of first issue that we come to, or that staff had some concern about, was the overall architectural plan. The architecture is a bit campus-like, I think. And in looking at the design, the way it's proposed, not that it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, it's just that it's different than really anything else we have downtown. The commission has seen a previous designs for this site, although we never did come to a hearing on it. It was continued and then eventually dropped. The commission did see those designs and was in favor of the design that was previously proposed, kind of a Spanish tile commission sort of architecture. I have those plans here if the commission is interested in looking at them to compare. I have also brought the plans that you recently...
Pass those around.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I've also brought with me the plans for that sort of that entryway gateway project. For the Scrambles and Mobile Gas Station site, you saw a conceptual review for that, I think, last meeting or the meeting
right,
before that.
A couple of meetings, yeah.
And you know, that has a kind of a similar architectural style and would be right down the street from this. So I don't know if you're interested in having it connect or be somewhat similar or not, or providing that direct. The property frontage that's commercial and then to the rear of the site or more towards the Dolliver frontage, you have it zoned RR, which is resort residential. These sites, such as it is, I guess actually the parking issue is related to the flex units that are fronting on Dolliver Street. Those are those live work type units where you have commercial space on the ground floor connected internally to two floors of living area above. And the question is, what is the parking requirement, or what should the parking requirement be for these types of units? The first option would be to just have them considered like any other residential unit. You provide two parking spaces for each, and that would be all that you would provide for them. Another option would be to break them out into their separate components. That would mean two parking spaces for each residential portion of the site, and then you'd combine all the commercial square footage in them, which is about 9,000 square feet, and divide that by the 300, one space per 300 square feet of commercial floor area for retail spaces, and allocate the parking that way. The first way, by just doing it for residential, you end up with a total requirement for the entire site of 138 spaces. If you go about it and pick up the commercial portion, the 9,000 square feet of actual commercial area in those units, it raises the total parking requirement up to 165. If you note in the plans, they're providing about 176 spaces, so it's actually overparked no matter what you do or what you decide. The issue becomes some of the things are not taken into consideration here, what the setbacks actually are going to be. That's another issue related to this project, and also dedication requirements, which may impact the number of parking spaces that they have, so it's fairly important that the commission provide comment related to this issue. Okay. The next issue that we come to is one related to the density for the site. Again, the density is established because the lot has a split zoning on it. I think page 829 of the staff report shows the split zoning and shows how approximately they're allocated. You have about 22,500 square feet of commercial area. Residential units in association with commercially zoned property, the density for those is established as one unit per 2,000 square feet. If you do the math on that, you get 11 units and some change. If you take a look at the plan, you'll note that there are 8 units of residential above the commercial units. And then there's another 3 units three residential units located behind the commercial. And they're totally within that commercial zone. That total number would then be 8 plus the 3 is your 11 that you can have. The issue comes into play when you look at the other units in the zone line actually splits them. There's 3 units that are split approximately in half, and then 3 other units that are maybe a quarter of them are within the commercially zoned portion of the project site. Were the commission to consider those, any portion of those, as units and allocate them toward the commercial density, the project would be over for the commercial part of the project site. However, if you look at the project as a whole, you calculate the density for the RR portion of it, which is 1 unit per 1,450 square feet, which would allow for 37 units and some change. You add the 37 with the other, you end up with 48 total units, which is what they proposed. The project would comply as a whole. Again, the question is, do you want to allocate any of those units that are split to this commercial portion of it, or is it adequate to consider it as the site as a whole? The next issue moves into the relates to the setbacks and what are the appropriate setbacks for the site. The previous plan that I was passing around there that came up before had all residential units facing Wadsworth, San Luis, and Dolliver as treated those as front yards and had 15-foot setbacks. The density of that project was about 10 units less than this one, though, but they provided full 15-foot setbacks. This one proposes pretty much 10 on the sides of San Luis and Wadsworth, and then it has the portion of the flex units facing Dolliver as 8. They're willing to go with 10. And they're proposing to look at the site as a whole again and consider Price Street their front, San Luis and Wadsworth as street side yards, which would be 10-foot setbacks, and then the Dolliver as a rear, which would be a 10-foot setback as well. Having the units closer to the street is not necessarily a bad thing. It does meet sort of the policy and the intent requirements of some of our design guidelines that are in the general plan that talk about having your porches and decks and front doors facing the street and having close proximity to the street and the sidewalk and the streetscape. If you try to look to the city's definitions for what's a front yard, the definition reads simply: in the case of an interior lot, the line separating the lot from the street right of way. In the case of a corner lot, the shorter street frontage shall be the front lot line. These are going to be condominium units. The lot line issue is not really going to apply, so this definition is not really applicable. So what the commission has before it is kind of a little bit of flexibility in determining what's appropriate for the site, and I'd like you to provide comment. It really, the architecture.
And then the parking issue, mm-hmm. the setback, the density issue, and dedication.
Dedication. I just wanted to note to you that dedication is not reflected on the plan. So
more of a heads up than a discussion, and then just the overall the view aspects.
Yes.
Okay. And when you say density, just to clarify, that's the residential versus commercial, or
well, yeah. I mean, you have the C1 portion of it allows one resident on a C1 zone property. You can have one residential unit per 2,000 square feet of lot area. When you do the calculation for the residential or the commercial portion of the lot, it equals that they can have 11 residential units on that commercial portion. They have that. The problem is the zone line splits some of the other units, and I don't know what the commission expects us to do with that. I mean, it's not addressed in our ordinance, and so the discretion is left to you. And it needs to be determined now, because if you say some of those units have to be counted in the commercial portion of it, then it's over on its density. If you say, well, if the site as a whole meets the density requirement, then we can consider those split units as part of the RR zone portion of it and just look at the site as a whole, then they're okay. So it's an important question, because they would potentially lose units or have to redesign them and connect some of the other ones, and you lose some of the openness of the design. So it has direct ramifications to their design.
Okay.
What type of commercial? I mean, this is quite a ways down on Price Street. What kind of commercial do you foresee in the immediate future? That far down on Price Street.
Well, it could be any number of
central core.
Yeah, there could be any number of retail uses. We have, you look across the street, you have real estate offices, you have title companies, you have, any number of things could go in there.
Is office space considered commercial?
Yes, it's commercial use.
Is there any precedent from this type of situation in the past where projects in which the zoning was split, in this instance where you had lots that split the zoning, whether the commission made determinations based on...
It came up before in relation to a conceptual redesign on the same project. Okay. I brought the issue before we actually brought that conceptual review to the commission and asked the question one other time.
That's how I remember.
And so some of the units were again split, and there was an issue related to the density, and the commission at the time seemed like that was a reasonable idea, although you didn't have a whole plan before you. I actually went to you before we took the conceptual review and asked the question, because if it wasn't worthwhile, then it wasn't even worth bringing the plan that they had to you. They needed to fix it. So.
And you said it was reasonable from what perspective?
Well, the commission at the time seemed to think that it was a reasonable proposal given the overall design of the site. Okay. If we allocated the split units to the and just said, okay, well, the overall density for the entire site works, and really what you're doing is allocating those wet lots that are split to the RR section, or RR zone property. I mean, you have to do something with them, and that's the direction that the commission came at the time that was okay. You don't have to hold to that, obviously.
I have another question, if I may. Is this project within 500 feet of the project, the John Snow project, which includes the...
Swan,
is that his name?
Yes.
Swan? The John Swan project that we looked at before?
Within 500 feet of it?
Yeah.
It might be. We're talking what, another street
over? Did it come all the way over to San Luis, San Lucas?
The gateway ends at Harlow Street, and this one, then so the next street over San Luis.
So this is San Luis,
so it's one block, you're probably right.
Yeah, I'm sure, it's probably within
500 feet.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you're what it'll look like as you drive down the street, you'll see one project and then the other one, and you'll be able to see that down the street. I mean, it'll be connected. As far
okay,
as
because they wanted to close this street right here is Harlow. Is that not correct? Is this Harlow Street?
No, Bay Street.
They want to close Bay Street, which is the next street.
Bay Street, so
that's
okay.
Part of that project.
Okay,
part of the other project.
Yeah.
Yes, not this one.
Which is a different project.
Yes, which is not this one.
Okay, thank you.
Which is the one on the plan, I think. That
anyone else have any questions, right, Scott? Before we go to hear the applicant,
I've got a question. Do you know what the history was of the gerrymandering of the zoning here? I mean, it's kind of peculiar the way it cuts down the block and then cuts over. And is there some history on this?
Well, it might have been based on the uses that were there at the time. There used to be a motel at the corner, and I don't know what was on there.
It was a motor court there.
There was a little green shacks there on the Dolliver side. There were, 12 or 14
but on
units
the,
or something
on the,
like that?
So I think it probably just encompassed.
On the Price Street side, it was a regular motel.
That's right.
It was a motor court with awnings.
Right.
It was very nice. Actually, it was kind of a Spanish style.
I remember that now. You're right.
So the point is that the zoning maps are created based on the existing use?
Well, I'm guessing at the time that's probably how they were put together. That particular hotel had been there for a long time. It's been around for a while. So I'm guessing that at some point when the city went through its various iterations of its zoning code and zoning maps, that it zoned it accordingly. Meaning you have a corridor that's like the size of the lots.
And the two houses, there are four houses existing, and two of them were part of it. Are we?
Three of the properties are now part of it. There's one that's still sitting out there.
Okay.
And this what is this house that's still sitting there? Two-story house? It's going to be surrounded by a 35-foot building.
Actually, it'll on the one side, as it's proposed here, it'll have the two-story community building and the access to the underground parking on one side, and then a three-story building to the other side, yes.
Okay, now let me understand the setbacks that they're requesting on the two streets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Wadsworth
mm-hmm.
and San Luis.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be from the curb? I mean, will these be setting then right on the sidewalk if you go 5 feet back, or will that be five feet back from the curb or 5 feet back from the sidewalk?
It'll be 10 feet back from the property line.
Well,
if you look at
the property
if you look
line
at the
relationship
plan,
to the sidewalk.
Here.
In the vicinity.
If you look at this is the property line here. They have the sidewalk on the outside of it, and then they have a setback to the building from there. So it's really this line here.
But the way those plans are drawn, that sidewalk is going to be expanded to include
Well, actually, a lot of this is going to be moved over because there's a dedication requirement over here of 3 feet, so actually it's going to move in some from that as well, potentially. But it's from the property line. It's the sidewalk supposedly on the outside of the property line, which is in the city's right-of-way. So what this is showing, I don't know if it's accurate or not. You'd have to ask the architect how accurate the plans are.
One thing that might help you in your discussion on the setbacks, maybe I'm jumping ahead, is that when the 98 zoning code was adopted, commercial uses didn't have a setback, but mm-hmm. residential uses did. 5-foot side yards and 10-foot rear yards. The requirement in the RR district is 15 feet. So,
for a front yard, yeah.
Front yard. So it might give you some insight as to what the planners in 98 were thinking about, the kind of their vision for those setbacks.
The 98 code is written very well, too. I mean, I appreciate how well it was done, and I look forward to the day when we can actually use it in our coastal zone.
But you're in a position now to make an interpretation, so.
And yeah.
To the extent it might help you there, it might be something to consider. Yeah.
And I think that, again, what this appears to me from the outside, and I didn't have quite the time that some of the other commissioners had to review it, but it appears to be right in the intent of the zone that it's going to be.
Does the applicant, they have a presentation for us, or how's that? Do they just hear for questions?
They're both here. I don't know how much they, you know.
Hi,
I'll Leon go ahead Bidlow. And open it up to the public. We'll hear from the applicant first.
Okay. I'm Leon Bidlow. I'm the applicant, VTV. We're glad to be here tonight to get your comments and direction on this project. I want you to be clear on the fact that we're here conceptually, but we do own the property, unlike the previous applicant. And so I'm going to turn it over to my architect, so I'm sure you'll have some questions for him. This is Bill Groudon, so I'm
okay.
available, too, if you have any
okay.
questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and Planning Commissioners. Do you have the PowerPoint? Or?
I have the disk.
That's okay. If you're gonna have to set it up, it's okay. I can just talk about it. If you got you guys, it's all in your packet. So. First, I'll talk about our concept of the project, and we did look at the project as a whole. We weren't looking at it as individual lots, and in Euclidean zoning, we usually do. It is somewhat arbitrary where we put lines, and it is a lot of times based on parcel lots and uses. So we looked at it more as how it would work within the city context, and so we thought the project would actually be better as a whole to have the commercial on one end, break it up with the residential, how we felt that the residential was broken up, and the center lots, what we call kind of more of the bungalow courts, are broken up on a residential massing. They are, you know, more in line with about 50 feet that is more typical of residential down San Luis and Wadsworth. And then down on the other end with being the flex units, which so having more massing on both ends. The buildings on both ends are more of a commercial feeling building, and they are actually brick. They'll be structural brick and with residential above. And the one thing I'd like to point out is that everyone's saying it's 3 stories all over, and it's actually not. There's a lot. The commercial building's 2 stories with the third story that is set back in a fair amount of locations, and the buildings that are more of the residential feel are also 2 and 3 story mass with a fair amount of 3 stories. The community building is a 1-story building, and that is trying to be out of each one. And each one of those buildings has its own private outdoor area. As rear yards and side yards, and then there's also front setbacks that are semi-private, and it's our philosophy that every street is faced with eyes on it, and therefore the buildings have front doors on it, windows on it, and all of the walkways do as well to try and to have more eyes on the street, and even the commercial with the residential above will have someone in it during the day, hopefully, and then at night as well. And it also, for us, putting the parking below was a big advantage because now we can have a more pedestrian-friendly project with it open down the center, allowing access through the site for the residents.
He's got your PowerPoint up if you want to take us through any of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so this is a view of the commercial building. And that's on price, looking right down the center of it. You can go to the next one. just go through that. That's all the stats, but I can't read them anyways. So you can see the commercial building and how it is more of a kind of a commercial block with residential above, and that is a predominantly brick building kind of, oh, thank you, on this section here with the access running through the center of it, and then we have access running behind it and an access between this building. So the project is actually broken up into three pieces. This line here, the center portion, and then the next line. These were, I was talking about the massing being broken up, trying to reflect more residential massing, and this massing is more of the larger commercial massing over here. These are the outside areas where everybody will have an outside area. This is the distance between these buildings. They're connected on one side, and then there's a large area between them. And these are two- and three-story masts. You can go to the next slide. You can see that these are pulled back. These all have, each one of these has a deck off of it, so it's not just a face on the street. And these areas are all over two stories, and then this sets back in this area. Next. These are all decks, and then these are where these all sit back off of the street. So this massing on this side is actually two stories with the third story step back, and so then these have decks on the front. So the only portion that's actually three stories on the street is this portion right here. On this side, these all have the third stories stepped back with the decks on the front. Next, please. And as you can see, I didn't point out where that was, but that one right there is only actually one story, and then that's the existing residence there. And just also a note that the density is a little bit different on this project as the project you guys were talking about. I think there was a couple proposed before that, and neither of them had the other sites involved in them. So so the density should be a little higher on this one than the ones before. Okay, next slide. And this is just the parking below. It's all below. And actually, what we would... we are overparked, but what we'd like to do is actually have some type of almost garage feelings, bless you, below, and have direct access to the units from the garage area, which is typical of other projects we have done. Next slide. And so this is the massing on the commercial end, and this all the red in here is actually truly brick buildings, and this is where we're trying. This area right here is the part that's three stories. That area. And then in the center is set a fair amount, quite a bit back. It's actually like a California bungalow. The courtyard, California courtyard bungalows, how they are accessed. There's multiple units accessed. There's four units in each one of the clusters, and two of them are in the rear and two are in the front. Next slide. That's just the other sides. This is predominantly deck and glazing to take advantage of the views to the beach. Next. Other side, so just next. And then these are just some 3D shots of how the building is conceptually viewed right now. And and at the corners, we're trying to erode all of our corners. And our buildings on the sides don't go to zero on the commercial end. It actually does have a setback. And on the flex space, it's set back even farther. It's 10 feet on the sides. So we're trying to... kind of respect the corners and the residential feel, and then these guys are more in the residential area. I think that's about it.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we, if any of the commissioners have any questions of the applicant, then we can hear from the rest of the public, then we'll bring it back, and then I thought what we could do is, since there's several items that staff wants us to evaluate, maybe kind of take those one at a time. That seems reasonable. Anybody have any questions of the applicant?
I had a question. And maybe I didn't catch it. Is there any open courtyard spaces proposed as part of this project?
Yes.
Okay.
The entire center. So I'm using my laser on the paper. The entire center. Well, I wouldn't say it's a public way necessarily, but it's not closed off to the public.
Okay. So.
One of the things that you mentioned when you did the last concept review here was going down Dolliver, that frontage on Dolliver. Considering an opportunity for Joe Public walking down Dolliver Street to stop mid-block for a water feature or benches or something like that. Is that what you're calling back to?
Okay. Let me back up a square. Carolyn, is it okay for... We're being... The We're making comparisons to the Gateway right now. And they're, the map of the Gateway has been shown around, and we're talking, they've mentioned the other project. Is it okay for me to even talk about that? I had to recuse myself given my involvement in the project. So
I
can
think
I
you'd
make
want to limit your comments to this project.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what my question is it a pedestrian-friendly project in that as the public is walking up and down the street through the commercial corridors, would they walk down that middle corridor from Price Street, would they be comfortable walking through that corridor and exiting on Dolliver?
Absolutely, and it's intended that way.
Okay, that
and
was my question.
That's why the site is broken as it is. And it's not
okay.
One. It's not. It's not dealt with as a block. It's not a building. It's not a project. It's more of a campus, and that the buildings are pulled apart, and the courtyards are made to where people can go through them, and they are broken right up. Both ends are broken, and there could be a water feature. There could be something on the in
for,
these areas. That
for the specific purpose of doing this. I'm sorry. I'm jet-lagged and not
that's actually
stumbling
the,
over my words tonight.
That is the exact concept behind it and why it's broken up that
perfect
way, so people can have access to it.
One more question, and I'm certainly not asking for any commitment, but just out of curiosity, what are your intentions for the residential portions? Do you intend to keep them, sell them? Will they be a vacation rental type units? Will they be residential units?
That's a question for the developer, but I'll try and answer it.
And again, I'm not asking for a commitment.
I'm just asking for the sake of asking. They're for sale.
Okay. And for sale to residential purposes, which 99% of the time down there is going to be a vacation rental anyway.
For sale for residential purposes.
Very well. Thank you.
Just as an urbanist, that's how I would hope that they would be. You know, just okay. Hoping that they would be occupied by businesses and full-time residential. But you know how.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting the wrong impression, but I'm looking at this, the last three-dimensional
okay.
pictures that you
uh-huh.
put together. And it might help you to get the slide up there. You're probably much more familiar with it than I am.
And I've got it here as well.
Yeah,
I've got
but
your report.
Taking a look at these models, I look at the plans, and it looks to me like some of the second stories are set back off the first stories.
Yes.
Okay. But when I get a look at this image down here. On this model image, it doesn't really show that those are set back. They look like they're just straight up and down the residential. Looks very straight.
It's your angle, but if you look at your top left one, that portion that is straight up and down is actually very narrow, and then there's decks that are coming off of that, and.
But the roof lines on the residential and the second floor, it looks like the second floor and the third floor look like they're all in a line. Is it
on? No, that's not.
That's not the way
it's
it
not,
is.
If you're seeing that, it's not reading right. Yeah.
Okay.
Are you talking about these guys? In here?
Yes.
Yeah, they are. It does
okay.
fade back. So
and then look at the other one
see,
up in the
right-hand
corner.
This right here
yeah.
is the three-story right here. Other than that, it steps back right there. I'm a little shaky, I guess. But and then it steps way back in that area and then steps back there and then comes back up to three stories there.
So you tell me that the third story is set back from the
yeah, the third story on that one right there.
Yeah.
There is a three-story face on it, but it is from here. It is this area right here. You can
yeah,
see
now
that,
that's
see the
not
shadow
in a
right
straight
there?
Line. That's not in a straight line. There, set
there,
back.
There is one portion where it's a straight line, and it's. I wish it wasn't so shaky. It's right there. See that shadow right there?
Yeah.
That's a step back.
Okay, but then it looks like it's coming back out again.
It's a deck. It comes.
Yeah, well, the deck comes right back out to where the first
yeah, there,
floor
there is.
Yeah,
there is a deck. And actually, the deck extends out a little bit farther than it in some places.
And I get the same feeling in the right-hand corner, upper right-hand corner of that same.
You're not talking about this one, are you?
No.
Okay.
The same slide.
Talking about that one?
No, the one up the right-hand corner.
Can you go to the north elevation?
The north
the
north
east
slide. Go through it.
It's the angle of okay.
There's one slide, I think, that shows the definition a little better. I'll tell you when you get to it. Going. No, that one right there.
This is the total. This right here. That's how it is. And you can see how that is tall, and that it steps out, and then this steps back. And so the decks.
I think that shows the decks a little clearer.
Come out to that edge. But there's never where these back up to each other. There's 10 feet between them.
Okay.
And I don't even think it's 16 feet, but it's. I don't know the exact number on it. But there is a small portion where it does go up.
Okay. I had one question for you. So the layouts that we saw before, that was different applicants, is that correct? The Spanish style? Was,
yes.
Or is this the... So that was, those are different
people. Yeah, different
entirely.
Developer. Yeah.
I see. Because I was just wondering why... and I guess you've kind of answered this. You want more of a campus feel. But I'm just a little concerned about what's the project that's going to go next to this. And the... You know, this is fairly modern. It's fairly, to me at least in the drawings, looks a little industrial. Whereas the project we saw before was a little more Spanish style, kind of replaced what used to be there to some extent. We can get more into that, but that was just, I just wanted to, I guess you, I mean, this is your design, so I mean, you obviously did this because you liked it. So is there any other reasons for the brick and...
For the brick's on just the in
right.
buildings, and it's used actually pretty sparingly on this. On
so
this
what
right
we
here.
Are you trying? What was your motif here? Is it a California bungalow or
on the centerpieces? Yeah, it is in the center areas. Yes.
So you sort of have a California bungalow and
industrial
look.
It's really viewed as to us as three different projects.
As what?
Three separate projects.
Oh.
So on the end, there's one, and it's actually a use as well as a different, almost different style and different type of like a commercial block. And then we have the courtyard and courtyard, what we call bungalow courtyards. And there's some that are on a courtyard, and then some that are broken up as a California bungalow in plan. Mm-hmm. And then on the third, it's more of the live work. No,
so I see. Well, that helps to clarify.
So
you view it as the most three separate entities.
Well, I think that what we're trying to do is not have it. It's a large site, and for one distinct style. I mean, we're not going to have brick on the center bungalow buildings. Those won't be brick. They'll probably be more of a plaster. But and those are it's for a reason. It's to break up the site and not have a big massive project or building in the middle mm-hmm. of town,
okay.
or in the middle of that project in that
right.
area neighborhood.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions before we open to the public? Bradford, do you have any?
I had the same concern that you had, Mr. Chairman. I like the total design, the concept that's going on, but when I looked at the renditions, I saw something that was really cold and institutional that didn't fit in with the brilliance on the architecture behind it. And that's just a concern that I share. And then I don't know so much that I go along with the idea of three different projects, because that's what I see here. It looks very very unattached and broken up, and it sort of breaks the theme then of dealing with it as a complete development and addressing some of these other issues. So that's a more of a concept on the exterior completion rather than the design, the subterranean parking, and the other elements.
Well, I suppose if it's a comment about being broken up, it's supposed to be meant to be broken up, especially on the interior buildings. The ends are more not broken up, and then the interior is supposed to be broken up.
Was one of the can I ask a question?
Sure.
Was one of the questions for breaking it up is to sort of deal with that issue of the monolithic large massing of the overall development? If it was just one big single building?
I think that it's much more neighborhoodly friendly, much more residential friendly if you break up the center portion, which is what is more on those side streets. It is more residential. I think that there's the highways are way more of a kind of a block. Commercial can handle those buildings. I don't think that it's appropriate to necessarily have large buildings that are not broken up on the more residential feeling, which is kind of reflecting across the street.
I don't think the question, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the question's really, I think we see the reason and the value of having it broken up. I think that what I'm personally struggling with is, do we need three different designs or three different projects to create that, to do that breaking up. And I guess that's, again, you know, you're the architect, so you obviously felt that that was important. But as this is a conceptual review and you're looking for our opinions, I think that's really what I would ask, is that is it necessary then to have three separate projects? I mean, I'm for breaking it up, but then again, I'm sort of wanting a little more symmetry to everything.
Other than these three separate types of projects.
I would say I appreciate what you're trying to do, though. I understand what you're saying, what you're trying to do, and appreciate it.
And I think that if they were, the elevations are a little bit more developed and could show, you know, probably more architectural instead of a little less actually rendered, can show how they actually do relate to each other, which could help. But we are here for your comment.
Well, I think
the plan to build these in three, I mean, since you got three separate kinds of things, I mean, you can't build them all at once, obviously, but is it designed in three different units as a result of, you know, over a 10-year period, you're going to build these things, or are you going to build this whole thing in a matter of 5 years or something?
I mean, I'm going to answer the question in two ways, and first we'll build it all as one. But the idea of actually it being all different is also to get we're trying to get a mix of different types of people that can afford to live there and be able to be there. So it'll all be built as one, but it is intended to kind of be something that could have appeared to be over time. But it will be built as one. There's an underground garage, and it will all be built as one.
I mean, I'm not an architect, but I don't know. I guess I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of having this mixture, but.
Yeah, I think that there's been talk on two different sides of whether we have a plan for the downtown and for the city, because let's face it, I mean, a lot of stuff is going to be torn down, and we're sort of in a redevelopment mode anyway. And I don't think that I've always felt like that we sort of wanted eclectic, you know, we wanted different styles. I mean, we don't want it to look, you know, necessarily like Santa Barbara, where we have fixed. Everything's got to be Spanish tile roof, and it's got to be a certain color. But I think what we're looking for is a real mix of different structures, different architectural styles, and then part of that is what a lot of the projects that we've seen, they've kind of come before us and built a new project, but tried to grab something from the past, you know. And I think that's a value, because I mean, basically, we're a tourist town, and I know that there's going to be, you know, commercial people working there. There's going to be residents living there, but the value to the town also is for tourism, and how this looks and what kind of downtown we create for ourselves is going to be important in that line too. And I think that's why, and I'm really the last usually to criticize, and I'm not really criticizing, it's just, you know, giving you my opinion. I think that I like the idea of the breaking up. I like the bungalow style. I just wonder if it's possible to maybe bring a little bit of that into a big part of what's going to be seen from the street.
The bungalow actually will be seen from the street, but and I appreciate what you say, and just I love all of California's architectural, all of our architectural history as well, and it is very different when you deal with, we're basically dealing with a clean slate. I mean, there's a couple of houses on there,
right?
But for the most part, we're dealing with a clean slate, and it would be very different if we were coming in and you know, tearing down what we thought was a very significant building.
No, I realize that, but I'm just saying, like was what Carolyn said, you know, about the old. You know, I'm not saying you're going to build it like the old Motor Inn, but, you know, I mean, just it's those kinds of throwbacks to the past that I think eventually will give Pismo a certain look that it'll just sort of create itself, sort of like what Avila's done. I mean, there really is no big plan centered around Avila, but you start seeing some symmetry going in there that there eventually is going to be, you know, there's already kind of a theme going on.
And I think that's really cool. I think that what, you know, like having the motor court, our office is in the motor court, and they're great for kind of what they were, and in our opinion at this time, it wasn't appropriate. But I'm all for the existing of the motor courts. I know you're not saying that. I'm just kind of throwing back in my
right.
opinion, and I'm not.
Right.
It's not really a comment on you. It's more of a comment on. Yeah, I love the 50s motor court of what that, you know, when it was a highway and it was awesome. I think they're great.
I think something else to keep in mind is that. Obviously, one other project has been brought forth. We have several projects like this coming into town, which generally we like the idea because we have a lot of old blighted buildings. In your case, most of them are gone.
Yeah.
And it is time to renovate, and it is time. But we're also charged with a continuity, not just with this project, but with all of the projects, to see to it that the town itself has a feel and a flow. The entire downtown has a good feel and flow from the north end to the south end down to the pier. And not just with the pedestrian, with the cars being parked underneath, but with an architectural continuity. And obviously we're not going to have them all the same, but it's got to be reasonable for this town, for what Pismo Beach is, and for what, as Councilmember Ravenault likes to say, what it's going to be when it grows up, which it's doing rapidly.
And I agree with that 100%. And I've been on your side of the desk, so I know that what you're up against and how it is, and I totally respect that.
And it may just be some of the renderings that you presented to us as
on Price Street. Okay, I don't think there's another brick building on the street. It's unusual. It doesn't basically fit in with, say, you know, the bank down there and Rosa's and the eating establishments down there and the other project that came in. And I personally focus in on that and say, hey, it doesn't fit here. Okay, and so I'm looking for some help down the line. On that kind of, and as the chairman said, you know, this may just be the facade of what you put on the outside of the building. It doesn't have anything to do with it.
Actually, no. This is structural. This is planned to be
structural
brick. Our client is actually a mason.
That's pretty.
It'll be brick inside and out. So actually, the dividing walls of the units will actually be brick.
You know, one of the projects that comes to mind is the recent Copeland's building that was constructed in downtown San Luis Obispo, and there I think that they did a great job of blending brick with other forms and styles to blend in different styles of buildings to make it all fit together and look really good.
Why don't we go ahead and we'll open up to the public, and we'll probably have you come back. And we are going to address those other issues because I know those are important for you to move forward as well.
Thanks. Thank you.
Would anyone from the public like to speak on this item? Come up and talk about 3 minutes on this.
Yes, I'm in Partners for the residents.
If you could give us your name and where you live.
Dave Simonson. I'm a resident here in the area, Napomo. But I'm a partner on the 350 San Luis Obispo Avenue. And we're a little concerned about the placement of the underground parking that's going to be on the east side of us. And then we also have a three-story building on the west side of us. And then from what now I'm hearing that we're going to have pedestrian traffic on the back side of us. And, you know, I'm just here to voice my concern. It sure seems like they put all these, these noise pollution and so forth, there's all this traffic coming in out underneath this underground structure right by our residence. And, we're somewhat an inconvenience here already, and that's something that we'll be discussing, I'm sure, later down the road with you know, the situation we're put in with all the construction going on around the residence, and just seems like I just want you to take that into consideration whenever you're working with a developer. That, you know, we're small people, but we are right in the middle of this, and please take into consideration our viewpoint whenever you are dealing with him.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else like to speak?
Yeah, my name is Bob Frank. I'm one of the other partners at 350 San Luis. Can we put that site map on there, looking straight down? I just wanted to. Basically, looking at this, you can obviously see our site and the community center next, and the driveway, the entryway to the parking structure. I can see multiple different sites that could be put instead of right next to us. That's fine. It just, for me, I'm looking at this and I'm wondering if it's being done that way just to try and push us out of the picture. We obviously are owners of that property. We're not looking at selling at this point in time. We're the only ones there. And this is where they put it, right there. They could have put it behind the commercial buildings there. That would be obviously less noise from the community center, that type of thing. But still, even having it there, the concern of having people walk behind the site as well. And also the design, excuse me, just a concern on the flavor of it. I too look around. Eventually someday we wanted to build something there, and we would like to have something that looks a little bit more conducive to the area. And if we want to do this and we still have that site and they build the way they're doing it right now, we're going to have to totally change the way we do it, I would assume, or we'll be the eyesore. So,
is this your personal residence?
No, it's not a personal. It's an investment.
It's in a rental property.
That's correct.
Neither of you live there.
That's okay. Correct. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Hi. My name's Kathy Simonson. I'm also one of the owners for 350 San Luis Avenue, the one main parcel in the project. When you asked Bob, they moved the entrance to the underground parking to us out of respect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Could we ask the applicant a question right now?
Well, let me hear the rest from the public, and we'll get the applicant back up. Did you want to speak? Nope, she was just moving. Anyone else?
Good evening. Tim Thiessen, California Design Associates at 725 Shelby Road. And some of you may know we have a project going down at the end of Wadsworth. One of the things that concerns me, hasn't been really addressed, and maybe hopefully it will at some point, is the extent of the underground parking. And don't get me wrong, I think that is a fantastic solution to get the cars off the street and get them out of the public right away, et cetera. But what concerns me about the volume of space that's going to be displaced by that underground parking in terms of the underground water. I live down at the end of Wadsworth there. There's a tremendous amount of water that comes down in the rains underground, both underground and on the surface. And I hope that at some point staff can talk to the owners about mitigating the potential of the underground water, because it, at least as far as I see it, the only place that water can go is down Wadsworth or down San Luis Street, which will ultimately come down Cypress Street, which will ultimately come down where the stairway is at Wadsworth, which is a pretty extensively used public access to the beach. I do have some concerns about what's been expressed as the institutional look of the structure. I think that the volume of traffic coming down Dolliver, I think, what is it, four times the amount that comes down Price Street, I think it would be worthy of the street exposure on Dolliver to maybe perhaps bust it up a little bit with some undulations, some features, something along those lines. And then also, too, basically the main access to downtown Pismo is the Wadsworth exit, which is coming down Wadsworth, and the Dolliver exit, which is coming off of Price Street at the mobile station there. So I think that those two street facades should be real important in terms of undulations in and out. That would be my opinion at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll close it to the public. And you had a question for the applicant?
Yes, I do. Yes, please. Was there any reason structurally or due to the setting that the garage entry was off San Luis instead of off of our main street, which is Wadsworth?
That was what was requested by staff. And I have just as a question, as a response to their, I totally respect their opinion on that, and we'd be willing to move it if that, too, and put the residential next to it. Mm-hmm. We were doing that. We were trying to keep it more out of respect than not. So we could move it to the commercial, behind the commercial building, and move the residential down more towards them. That's what they would rather. And I can understand their position, and I respect it. So put it on that side was actually, we had it on the other side originally, in a different location, not on on one of the main streets, but actually on the side street. But it was moved to that location, not that exact location by staff, but they were asked for it to be off that street.
Do you want to comment on that, Scott?
Well,
Wadsworth is a collector street and has more traffic on it. And so I sat down with the engineering division when they originally came in and asked where they wanted it to access from. And we decided, obviously, that you can't put it on Dolliver because too much traffic was running down Dolliver. And the same with Price. And so we chose the less busy street, which would be San Luis. And that was myself sitting down with the engineering division.
I would agree with Scott on that.
Is Wadsworth a wider street than San Luis?
It's a collector
street.
They're both the same width, actually, as design, and they're not going to get probably widened as part of this project, but we are going to get dedication. But they're both at about 50 feet, I think, now, so they're approximately the same.
Is there any way to move it, just move its location?
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say, how I respect them. Yes, absolutely, and we will.
That's
no problem. I already sketched it out.
It's actually shown in a different location on their parking plan. If you look at the parking plan, it's not located right there.
That's probably because we relocated because we talked to staff.
Yeah.
But we'll move it over to the commercial area behind the commercial. That's not an issue for us. That's okay.
So adjustments could be made if they have.
We're by no means trying to drive out or change the neighbor.
I think it's important, and I'm glad to hear that you're willing to work with them, because you will find that in the long run, by communicating with them, there's some things that you're going to have limitations on, but if it's workable, it'll serve you in the long run to, I'm glad you're willing to do that and to talk with them about that, because I'm sure that there's some, valid concerns that they would have as well.
Of course, that particular block between Harlow and San Luis has more residential on it, but it's going to be blocked between two major new developments that are
modifications made to that design. Again, just looking toward the fact that that's going to be, very visible. I'm not an architect, so I wouldn't dare start telling you how it ought to look. But I can just tell you that I'm not, and it seems like there's pretty much a consensus here that we'd like it a little less commercial looking, and that's all I can pretty much give you unless somebody else wants to any other comments on it. But
yeah, I mean, I guess my comment is that the Copeland's project in downtown San Luis Obispo, where they blended brick with other type of materials and styles, and I think it's very effective. And if you could somehow extrapolate some of those principles into your design, I think it'd be very advantageous.
Okay, let's discuss the parking. Scott, you specifically were looking at, why don't you, it's been a while since we,
okay.
What you're looking for us to give you some opinions on.
Well, it's how we're calculating the parking for the flex space units. And I know you see the project right now and it's over parked, but it may not be over parked when they're done.
Right.
with some of the design changes that they probably need to make. So you have these flex space units, these live work units. They're designed with interior access. You have the commercial area likely being on the bottom floor, and then the living space that goes along with these is two floors above that. The question really is, how do we calculate the parking? This type of use is not addressed in our ordinance. So the options are: you take the two different uses, separate them. Residential, it's two spaces per, and you take the square footage of the commercial space on the bottom floor. You park it at 1 per 300. There's about 9,000 square feet of it, and so if you look at the parking table on sheet 629, that page 6 of 29, the total number for the entire site would then be required spaces would then be 165 spaces. Or if you take the flex units, you have the 9,000 square feet divided by 300 is 30 spaces, and then you have two for each of the 10 residential portions of it, and that's another 20, so 50 total. If you just accept it as being residential and just park it at the residential, then it would just be two per, and you'd only be providing 20 spaces for that. That would lower the overall parking requirement of the site to 138. And again, right now they're proposing 176, but I don't know if they'll be able to maintain that or not when they're done. So it could impact how they, how the development moves forward.
But
so
either how you do it, you still got more parking than.
You do right now, but my thinking is that when they're done with dedications and so forth, that they may not.
But are we giving?
I don't know yet, because we don't have a real solidified plan here. But they're going to have dedications. It's going to squeeze the site some, and it may affect their parking.
But the fact that that there will be commercial and that there will be residential in projects, that we've had before, and granted, it really depends on what the commercial is, but, ideally, if there's somebody that's going to leave that residence and go to work and then come back, and the people that are doing the commercial are going to leave at 5 o'clock, Or if the if it's an owner that lives above their commercial, then they're going to they're parking one car anyway.
Yeah, I mean they're going to be connected internally, so it's going to be like the idea is your business is downstairs, whatever that is.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, but commercial still has a street to park on, and what you're looking at is short-term parking.
Well, ultimately, yes, you're correct, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, do they need to have the extra spaces? Do you need to park it at the 1 per 300 and then also the 2 for the residential piece of it? Or does it make sense that this person is going to live upstairs and work downstairs? Or maybe, you know, there'll be two people living there and working downstairs, and so those spaces,
cases,
you know, are...
Maybe exactly the case.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It would be actual reduction of the actual parking demand when you look at those two uses in conjunction. The overall demand would be reduced.
These are the exact comments the commission provided before when I asked this question. Yeah. So that's really
I'm pretty comfortable with it. I think that it's overparked now, and I think it's a good point that you make that things will change a bit. But I think the fact that it's unique in its design and as far as the split, that's going to mitigate, I think, any other things that might change. That's my feeling anyway on the parking.
I would agree with that.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's option two, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
It's on page 729. Right?
So that was a little easier than the view.
Okay. Next. The next item is...
The setback?
That was parking, so the residential density issue and how you want to count those. If you really look at... The story is told on the exhibit that I have on page 829. It shows the split zoning. If you take a look at it right now, the way it's designed... If you just take a look at what's entirely on the commercial portion of it, it complies. What the commission needs to figure out is what do you want to do with the lots with the units that are split, because you have a line as the zone line splits three units in half and then runs through about another three units, about a quarter of them. If you apply any, add all that up and say it's one unit, and it applies to the commercial portion of it, they're over on their density and doesn't make it. However, if you calculate density on both pieces, the site complies with the overall density requirement of 48 units. So as a site as a whole meets it, if you wanted to say, hey, we'll look at and allocate those split units project, it includes almost the entire block minus one lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is one entire project. The fact that it's split zoning is just sort of an inconvenience, really.
Yeah, I'm comfortable looking at it as an entire project. I think it's just, we couldn't even figure out exactly why it even got split zoned like that, other than just from grandfathering in. So, I don't think it's necessary to have that interfere with pretty much what the logic is, and that it's a whole project, and I'm comfortable with the density. Other comments?
I'm fine with that, too.
Yeah, it looks okay.
I mean, would the other alternative be to either redesign the project, or what about rezoning some of those?
Well, that they could rezone it. They could come in to rezone it with their application and just have it all. Well, I mean, that doesn't really even fix problem necessarily. I mean, it depends on how we go
that
about it.
That just seems like a lot of
that would require amending the general plan.
And you have the authority
need to do that.
In the zoning code.
Yeah.
The zoning code gives you the authority to make this interpretation. So you have what you need to take an action.
Okay.
That's the way I feel about that.
I'm good with it.
Okay.
I'm good with it.
Okay, then, is it setback?
Okay, yeah, well, now we're on to the setback issue. And really, again, you look at the site as a whole, and what is the appropriate setback for these units? If you look at all the street frontages as front yards, then these are 15-foot setbacks. They needed to redesign the project, squeeze it down some, probably connect some of these units. I mean, the architect probably answered that better than I could, but it's probably going to result in something like that. It's going to squeeze it down. You're going to lose some of that interior space. You're going to lose some of that openness. And you're going to get your extra 5 feet, and it'll be set back.
Did you concur with what the architect said as far as when he explained to Commissioner Arion about the setback, that it was back, or you talked about that too, back from the property line?
It is back from the property line, and the way they've, you know, arranged...
I mean, it's not on the street, in other words.
Yeah, it's not, and they have, and the units themselves go back in, like they show the entryways and stuff, so there's quite a bit of, I'll call it horizontal articulation running through the buildings. They are all pretty much still... relatively that same 35 feet.
And staff's opinion is we're not going to have this project sitting on the curb.
No, not at all. And actually, you know, in our the design element of the general plan, it encourages things like that. You have all your decks forward, and it's that pedestrian orientation. It's that connectivity to the street, to the sidewalk, to, you know, the what's going on in town. It provides that more lively streetscape and street.
Well, and I think that's true for a beach town.
One of the things that concerns me about this is if you push them in, then you're going to lose the openness on the inside. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, they've got to have so many units or it's not going to pencil out, okay? And so if you force them to go in, you're not going to have the openness that you want. Mm-hmm. But I do have a question as to how, you know, you have to have trucks come in here to pick up trash and all that kind of stuff. How is that going to work with the housing over the top of some of the commercial? And
they'll have to deal with the
three-story garbage chutes that go down to the down below parking and pick it all up down there?
They're going to have to figure out a way to work with them. They're going to have to work it out with South County Sanitation about how they actually access the site. I mean, that'll be part of our review.
Like the Middle Ages, they just throw it out on the street.
No.
you mentioned, I think it's horizontal articulation.
I mean, as opposed to the vertical, it's all pretty much 35 foot, but the horizontal thing has the buildings going, like, you know, in and out, yeah.
And that's kind of in line with the comment that a member of the public made about the undulations, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, there's, and the comment was actually correct. There's not much of that horizontal portion of it on the Dolliver and Price Street frontages. There's quite a bit of it on the Wadsworth and San Luis frontages because the buildings do go in and out, and you have the spaces between them, and they're much more broken up.
We're not talking about setbacks related to the Simonson and Frank property at all here. And what about the setback? You mentioned the view corridor on Dolliver.
We have a view considerations overlay zone, and it picks out this strip that runs down Dolliver. As you're aware, if you've ever driven down Dolliver, it kind of curves, and so you don't have a straight line of sight view corridor. I'm not even sure why it was really placed on that area, but it's there, and there's really no, you know, there's nothing that's shown here that you know, does any kind of analysis of the view. I think with just the basic setback you're going to have, it'll be okay. But if the commission wants them to take something into consideration when you're doing this, then we should tell them now so you don't ask for it later when they come back, because they'll have it for you, so you can say, yeah, we want to see it in relation to whatever that streetscape is. You want that shown on a plan going down the street and what it's going to look like. If you want that, we'll get it.
I would be interested in that view analysis.
Yeah. Okay.
Are they ever going to, if they ever chop down all the trees that we got on between the 101 and the ocean, they would be able to see over the top of these kinds of things and see the blue water.
And through them.
Huh?
And somewhat through them on the sides of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to sacrifice that to have a little bit more street room. Does that answer your questions on view, or was there other issues?
Yeah, I think that gives me the view analysis as well.
I think we covered all of them.
Other stuff was just informational items. I don't think I have anything else.
Okay.
Any other questions that we need answered?
I'd like to just ask the applicant, do you have anything further questions for us before we move out of this item?
No, and I appreciate all
I know
your
we didn't
comments.
Give you much direction on the structure side of it, but
no, the again, direction was great.
I really would want to, because that's really where your talents lie in.
Right. No, I appreciate all the comments and the direction.
I do really like the way you stepped in the ground floor of the commercial around the corners. That's really nice.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean,
it's very. It's more.
We will articulate much more. And actually, the only thing I will comment on is that I'm a little taken aback by the brick comment, but. If it's not brick that one wants, that's fine. I mean, we don't do it these days because we can't afford it. And
right.
In California, there's a new way of doing it with structural brick. It's expensive, but we can go cheaper.
I mean, well, I'd like to see some brick. I think some brick would be nice.
One.
One or two on the bottom. We won't be removing it, but we'll hear your comments.
I don't think it was necessarily the brick. I think it was just that it just looked a little too commercial.
Yeah, and part of that's our modeling and the way we modeled it, and it does look monolithic with the
And if you're comfortable with that aspect of a different look at it, you know, a more realistic look at it, and you're comfortable with that, then you can take that chance as well. I mean. It's not where I think that the reality is that we like a lot more of this project than we dislike. I mean, I think that it's a nicely designed project. I think the only thing that we really kind of address, and again, maybe it's through presentation, you know, is just that aspect of the commercial side of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I appreciate that, and I hear you.
Okay. I had one other comment, and that has to do with the first level plan and the concern with the existing residents and the parking structure, and I think we discussed that issue. But just in general, the open space courtyards, you know, I think you've done this to some degree, but making sure that you have a sort of a buffer with that courtyard.
Yeah, we would plan to buffer that courtyard. And as they were talking, I was actually thinking about the community room, because I never thought of it, still don't think of it as this, you know, this party zone place to where it would become like a place where it would disturb them. It was actually there to help them and to be a buffer. But as they were talking, I can appreciate what they were saying, and I will make every effort to buffer them and try and keep them. I don't want to make them an island, though, either, unless they want to be an island, which we can talk.
Sometimes the best way is just simply have a cup of coffee and talk about it with them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that may work it out, you know,
I agree.
The best right there.
And we want to be good neighbors, so it's not like...
Great, we're glad to hear that.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll want to take a five-minute break?
Sure.
Yeah.
Good. We'll take a five-minute break. Thank you.
Have you got it?
Back on Superman time.
Okay, we'll go ahead and start the meeting.
It didn't work. Bat wings.
We're on to our public hearing items tonight. And, excuse me, we're going to start our meeting now. Thanks. The first item tonight on the public hearing agenda is at 334 Indio. This is project number 050162. This is a coastal development architectural review permit for demolition of an existing single-family residence and the construction of a new 4,660-square-foot single-family residence. Site is located in the single-family residential R1 zone of the Sunset Palisades planning area. And Sarah Davis?
I'll be giving that this evening, yes.
Sarah, you want to go ahead and give us this project?
the project as proposed is in compliance with all the development standards listed in the 1983 zoning code, as well as the policies in our 1992 general plan, local coastal plan. Therefore, staff is recommending approval of the project. We did receive a letter noting some concerns related to how height was measured and how the grades on the site were established. And we did request and received a copy of the actual stamped survey.
Excuse me. Would you mind shutting that door back there?
A copy of the actual stamped survey for the site, which shows where the high point of the lot is established. I guess the concern was there's some fencing back there and debris is somewhat piled up back there, and then the person's concern who has the lot behind this was that it was artificially built up. So I have the project we get when we get the topographic information, and they look just like this.
Okay.
How did you determine the center of the structure for the 25-foot measurement?
How did I determine the
center of the structure?
The project wasn't close to the 25-foot at the center of the building footprint.
Any place?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's well below that. I think at its highest point, they're actually excavating down, but even from that, it's only 22 feet. I think if you measured it from the existing grade, that house would be under 20 feet tall, the center of the building footprint.
Okay. Anything further that you have for us?
No. Okay. That was it.
Sarah, have anything to add?
No, I don't think she does either.
I have a question for Sarah. On this.
Okay.
Really,
it's for the public that there's actually, it says Sarah's going to give us this report. That's why you may not get the joke.
I'm the one that actually prepared.
I'm concerned a little bit with the landscape plan.
Okay.
And I get back to the same old issue that you heard before, but I want to know they planted three palm trees in the backyard, not in their front yard where it would bother their view, but perhaps their neighbor's view in back of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they go ahead and put these palm trees in, and they always put them in threes or twos instead of just one palm tree. And when you put those up and they get up away, they're very really obscure.
the view shed from people in the back of them to the ocean, and seeing the blue water. And no mention is made the height of these trees, but I know these trees that they're talking about will grow over the height of the building.
They're queen palms, yeah.
Yeah, they're queen palms, and we got a lot of them down there. And so, you know, I'd like to make that comment that I think these people should consider other people's views and perhaps select just shrubbery in there rather than trees in groups or just one tree. And I wonder if you've discussed that with them.
We didn't. We took a look at the trees that were proposed. They were queen palms, and they have, you know, they don't have their foliage, and their canopy isn't very thick, and typically can see around them. Having several of them in the corner, though, could pose a problem. We could have them move the trees, or have fewer of them, or maybe have the trees in the front and put that place that's kind of standard condition that we use that limits the height of it to no greater than the high point of the house.
Are these trees in the view corridor?
This house, the view corridor doesn't apply to these to these homes in this location on the other side of the street.
Is that pretty much a boilerplate you're going after now, is the tree height and the roof height?
Well, that's how we could address it in this instance. Obviously, you know, we take a really hard look at the ones when you're talking about the ones that are on the ocean side of the of Indio Drive, but it's no less applicable really to these lots on this side as well, because you have residences behind them, and clearly the issue, it doesn't go away just because it's not the ocean side of the street. So we can address it, and we could condition it to do any number of things. Again, it could be to lessen the number of trees in the back, it could be to move them, it could be to have the trees just in the front and limit them to the height of the maximum of the house so that they don't grow up and block the views to the people behind. There's any number of things the commission comes to agreement on that we
I think with palms, I mean, we've sort of been fairly lenient with palms because they're not like a regular tree that branch out. And basically you have a few years where they may grow to a height of where they block, and then they grow on beyond that. And there is some aesthetic.
Well, I find that not to be Carolyn. The case, Mr. Chairman, when they're planted two or three together.
No, I see that could, well, but again, that eventually in time they'll grow up beyond the view.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as they're almost like poles.
Carolyn? Hypothetically, a project, it's conditioned, the tree is not to be higher than the roof level of the house. The tree grows higher than the roof level. How is that enforced?
It's very difficult to enforce it. It's very difficult to enforce it.
Perhaps Commissioner Ehring is onto something here where we just enforce it now, at least make it, put it, you know,
you can do
the landscape
that,
plan.
But like paint colors and roof tiles, what you regulate today, two weeks from now or a month from now can change. And there really isn't much you can do about
That's
it because
right.
the house is built. You can't, unlike a commercial development that maybe got a conditional use permit, you can't really revoke it.
Well, and also somebody buys the house and they think, I'd like to have some palm trees back here.
Sure.
They're not going to go back and look at.
Yeah. Well, they don't come back to the Planning Commission to additional palm trees.
But I don't have a problem when we hear from the applicant, we can address this. Maybe palm trees, maybe that's not a big issue
maybe
for them.
So.
Any other questions? Scott, any other questions before we hear from the public? Does the applicant want to come forward? You can go first.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bill Blackledge. Wanted to thank you for considering our project.
My concern is, how tall is this two-story structure going to be?
Why don't we go ahead and address that for you? How tall is this going to be?
I realize that the survey has come in. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to look at it. I was in yesterday afternoon hoping that it had been deposited because Mr. Blackledge told me a week ago, Monday the 31st, it would be there. However, it was not. It must have come in late yesterday or sometime today, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. I guess, you know, my main concern and one thing that I'm still trying to figure out is, you know, where exactly is a site grade in relation to some fixed point, and also a fixed point that isn't just on the lot. All the documents so far that I've seen, it's only relative to that lot. There's no external fixed point. I hope that the survey, which I haven't had a chance to review, shows the elevations of the surrounding properties. Certainly hope that we have a surveyor's mark. When I spoke to Mr. Blackledge, he also said that he would be willing to put up site poles. I think that's a really wonderful idea because it would really help myself and the others in the neighborhood whose views are going to be impacted understand where this house is going to be. And what I appreciate that you brought up the three trees. I had seen that too in the plans and was concerned that I'll have not only a home, but multiple palm trees perhaps also taking the view. So I guess, you know, my biggest concern is just, you know, how tall is this going to be and what is that point going to be? Where is the site grade? I've even been told that the high point they were taking as the top of a piece of corrugated fiberglass that holds back some of the debris pile in the back. So I have a few other concerns also. In order to meet the 15-foot height, because this is a pretty flat lot, they're going to have to do some significant excavation. We have a high water table in this area, so I'm concerned that I may have slippage in, because I have a fairly steep slope that goes down to about this lot. We have a 10-foot drainage easement that we both share. I'd like to understand how, you know, our drainage is may be impacted by that. I know my slope is slightly slipping down into their slope. My home was built in the late 80s as part of Sunset Palisades. And finally, because we do have a high water table in this area, and they're right now, I believe, planning to go down at least 8 feet, perhaps more, and a subterranean. They most are going to have sump pumps. So I'm concerned about potential noise, either for myself or neighbors who are also very close by on the side. In that part of Indio, our homes are close together. So I would like to get answers, especially to how this house is going to be situated before we go for approval. I don't think I've had enough information provided in the applications, and I apologize for not having had a chance to review the survey, nor to have, you know, some of my consultants be able to do that, but it simply wasn't in on time. So I would request that if you can, you would delay this until we have more information, where I think we could really make informed decisions if this project would be appropriate for the neighborhood.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, as far as the site poles go, we don't protect as much as in some cases we'd like to. We don't have the ability to protect people's views when another structure is built and it fits within all the zoning rules and regulations. That's how basically we have to judge each project, whether it's applicable to how it's zoned and within the height recommendations that we go by. So the story poles would be really more of a voluntary thing. It's not necessarily required. The survey report has been given to staff, and that's really who does evaluate that. We're getting a report from staff that they feel like that it's makes sense, that it's within the survey reports that they've seen in the past. Do you have anything to add as far as how, where it was measured, or
the survey itself appears adequate. I don't have any reason to question it, really. In talking with the surveyor, his explanation as to how they did it and where they measured it from match right with the plan with what I would expect him to say, and matches mostly what I've heard from other surveyors as well. As we don't take into account anomalies that are out there, like say root balls from trees. We don't measure from the top of those. We don't measure from mounds of dirt that are, you know, sort of artificially placed there. We don't measure from debris piles. We measure from the actual grade that's out there, and we move stuff around to obtain that natural grade.
Right.
His comment was, my stamp's on there, you know, that's me certifying that this is the grade that's out there.
Right.
And the information that I provided on my survey can't be replicated,
right,
you know, by another surveyor. Well, that would be somewhat unusual to have
one final. I just want to get one final before we move. And then as far as the drainage, that's something the engineering will look at when this project comes forward, correct?
Yeah, it's something that will be addressed.
House that's already there. Mm-hmm. So I think she's probably getting the benefit of the doubt on elevation. And this structure is only 15 feet exactly?
Yeah, it's 15 feet from the high point. It's it is. They have it right
and
up.
That's from 103 plus 15 is 118 feet or something like that. Is that what I come up with?
120.5.
120 point?
The high point of the house will be at 120.5. It's 15 feet above the high point of the lot, which is 105.5.
Oh, 105. Okay. I was looking at the contour that was on here was about 103.
Okay. Anyone else that hasn't spoke want to speak for the public? Okay, we'll close it to the public. Any further discussion? If not, we'll have a motion.
Well, I'm concerned that the only person that's here to talk to this issue is the person who lived, or the resident right behind. And she hadn't had opportunity to see this. Is that a problem with anybody else?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to continue it.
I don't either.
All the information, maybe this will help, all the information was provided. This, the survey information, we don't usually get the copy of the stamp survey at this point.
Okay.
Usually it's given to the architect, and the architect represents it on the plans, which is what you have in front of you. But because the issue was brought forward, I said, okay, well, I can't 100% verify that this is the survey grade out there. What would happen is if it was wrong, this would end up being caught when they put their foundations in.
Okay.
Because we would have them certified, and they would not match up to the elevations that are shown on their plans now. So.
Okay. My second concern would be as to when notification went out and all this kind of stuff. 2 weeks ago or
10 days.
I mean, so this person would have known
a week ago Friday.
2 weeks ago that she could have come into the office
and
take a
did.
Look at it.
And
she did.
Yeah. The only thing she hasn't seen is the survey, and I got that today. So
I'm comfortable with the survey. The licensed land surveyor, his stamp is on it. I'm comfortable with staff. We do a lot of work with land surveys around here. We've got some difficult lots to measure, and this is not one of them. And I'm also, this house fits right into what we've been seeing going on Indio Drive these days. I think it absolutely fits the neighborhood. It's a really nice project, and I'd like to see it go forward, and I'd like to see it approved this evening.
Would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I motion that we approve project number 05-0162, approving the project as conditioned by staff.
And also the landscape
and
consideration.
Yeah, would help me with the language with that.
Oh,
trees not to go beyond the height of the structure.
Right.
I will second that motion.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Our next item is citywide amendments to the 1983 and 98 zoning codes. This is amendments to the 1983 and 98 zoning codes to address parking for restaurants and tandem parking for residential uses. And I don't see Judith here. Are you going to do this one? Carolyn's going to give us some background. Now, is this from our joint meeting with council?
Yes, this is a result of your joint meeting with the council. We were asked to research some other cities and come up with some alternative ways that cities have to calculate parking. And that was really related to commercial development, restaurants in particular. That was one issue. A second one was the discussion that you had back in March regarding tandem parking on small residential properties. So what I thought I'd do is talk about each of those separately.
Mm-hmm.
The survey that you have, essentially there were about 48 cities that responded to this survey that went through the HCED listserv, and they were all over the map. But when we boiled it out, it appeared that there were basically three categories of determine parking requirements for restaurants. One category was to just count and assign a square footage on a per parking space, on a per square footage basis, a parking space for area where you would congregate. That would be area that would be a dining area, a waiting area, or an outdoor dining area. A second alternative that a lot of cities use, in fact, 19 out of the 48 cities use, is to count seats, which I can tell you from our experience here, that is really difficult. And last, the third alternative is to calculate the parking by using the gross floor area, kitchen area. I'm thinking of some place like that little sandwich shop on Price Street. I can't remember the name of it. People sit outside and next to the, you know, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the direction we thought would be best to go for the city. After reviewing all of these, after looking at some of the comments by these different cities, it just seemed to make the most sense.
So you're saying though that the 75 would still count toward non-eating area? You're talking about kitchen?
No, just no. Just areas where you would congregate. Eating area, waiting area, and whether the eating area be inside or outside, you would count that. But everything else, bathrooms, hallways, kitchen,
you wouldn't
count that.
Would you measure the 75 feet as usable square feet? In other words, the interior of the building less any penetrations. There's a big pole in the middle of the building. That doesn't count because nobody can sit where the pole is.
Right.
Very well. So if I might, Mr. Chairman, this is... particular ordinance has been in my crosshair since the first day I sat down on this chair, because I've been involved in this particular business in this city for many, many years, and in various aspects. What I would agree with staff that one seat per 75 square feet of usable dining area combined with 1 foot, or excuse me, one parking space per every 400 square feet of employee area, ergo the kitchens, the prep rooms behind the bar, and zero for any storage, because there's zero impact in the storage.
When you say employee area, what do you mean?
Well, the kitchen. For example, area of the kitchen.
So actually, you're going above and beyond what staff has recommended.
Well, the employees have to park somewhere, too.
Yeah, no, but they're including that's each 100 feet.
We factored that into with the 75 square feet. We factored those employees.
I think there's also a danger, because I've been in the restaurant business, and the reason they call it prep is it's preparation prior to the meal. Those people are usually gone by the time the restaurant opens.
Mr.
They're
Chairman,
in there getting ready for the meal.
You've got a bartender. You've got a cook. Who are, you know, they, the cook and the prep people will basically occupy the same space.
Well, I don't see why we need to complicate it more. I think the staff has done a great job in simplifying it and just focusing on dining, waiting, and outdoor dining areas.
That's what they're recommending.
And that it's 75 square feet for those spaces or for that area. And that way you don't have to factor in and analyze the food prep or employee space or anything like that. I think you've got a very simple approach. It's very doable.
I have one question. So was it originally 100 square feet and we're going to 75? Or
it was, but that was for gross floor.
Yeah, that was
for the entire building.
Now we're going to 75 just for the usable.
Right. I see.
If you want to look back on some of the other cities.
That's it?
I'll direct you to them in your staff report.
Okay.
For instance, on page 12 of 22, if you look at Santa Fe Springs, their standard is one space for every 35 square feet. Plus, they have a requirement for every two employees on largest shift, and now you get into how many employees you have. So that's not quite the perfect example. Another one is Delano on page 8 of 22. Their requirement is one space for every 80 square feet of dining area, whether indoor or outdoor. The note there says the size of the kitchen would not impact the calculation of the required parking. The third one is Agora Hills on page 6 of 22. It's 15 spaces per 1,000 square feet. Well, that calculates into one space per every 67 square feet. And then the comment was outdoor seating parking required. Three or fewer tables are exempt, which actually that's not a bad.
Yeah.
Because those are more, you know, just waiting on the street. But those were the prime examples. The Agora Hills and the Delano examples are really similar to what we're proposing.
I would apologize to staff again. I just got back and I didn't really get a chance to completely review this. What you've got down there is fine. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
Well, no, I like the idea of simplifying it. I think that sometimes when you simplify it, it's very clear to the owner of the restaurant, either prior or when they're remodeling, what they need to do, and it gets into a gray area as far as the prep and all the other things. I think that this will be helpful. So in the case of the Splash Cafe, this would mean that they would be able to build their dry storage and they would not pay any LU fees. Is that correct?
Right.
And I think did San Luis Obispo participate too, the city of San Luis Obispo?
No, I don't think they responded.
Because I think theirs is very similar to this, because I had talked to somebody and they do it on function as well. So in other words, if something is dry, anyone like to speak on this first item?
Good evening, Chairman Sorgan Fry and Planning Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you on this tonight. I wanted to say a number of things about just redevelopment of downtown. Maybe this isn't the right place. I think this is what needs to happen, and maybe these comments are more germane at City Council, because I think you all are thinking the same thing I am. There's unreinforced masonry buildings downtown that need to be demolished or reinforced. We have business owners being sued downtown because of accessibility issues. You know, the cost of energy is going up. We really need to redevelop a lot of downtown, and this is going in the direction that we need to go. So hopefully I'll be invited to a city council meeting. But the one thing I was hoping that would occur tonight would also be a differentiation between what is a sit-down restaurant and what is a pedestrian-oriented restaurant, such as a coffee shop, where it's really people are walking to it, they're already downtown. I think this is great for restaurants downtown, but if you've got a coffee shop where people are walking to it, I think the people already there, and to require, in this case, say, for a 1,200 square foot pedestrian-oriented restaurant, I think we'd be looking at 5.3 spaces if you had roughly 400 square feet of seating, whereas maybe if you did that more of a standard commercial building at 300 square feet per parking space, you'd be required 4 spaces. And I think that would probably be more appropriate for a more of a pedestrian-oriented restaurant. So there was talk of differentiating that back at the joint meeting, so I don't know if that could be addressed potentially as well. Thank you.
Give me a pedestrian-friendly – give me an example.
A coffee shop like
when you start talking
like Zodox downtown,
a pretty big size building.
Sure, 1,200 is maybe a little larger than like a Zodox. I mean that may be more like 500 or 600 square feet, but I think in that case maybe only 2 spaces would be required, because there's not a lot of maybe 1 or 2 people occasionally driving up to that coffee shop on Price. Or Black Pearl, for example. Most of the people going to Black Pearl are already down there and already walking there.
I don't know Black Pearl, so.
Pismo Beach Hotel.
All
Papa Joe's now.
Oh.
Okay, now I know. So, anyways. 500 square feet.
You know, you're not going there, driving there, sitting down there. You're walking there.
Like a donut shop. You go and get a cup of coffee.
And right now, Pismo doesn't have any differentiation, but most places in the county and other cities in California, there is a differentiation between the two uses.
Well, you could consider that. I mean, currently the code says that it gives a distinction between restaurants of 4,000 square feet or less and restaurants above 4,000 square feet. I think the quandary you'd find yourself in is picking the number. What's the number going to be that's going to be different than your standard? Is it going to be 600 square feet, 500, 1,200? I don't know. And in the responses that we got, there are a few that give you size cutoffs. For instance, San Clemente on page 11 of 22, it says under 3,000 square feet, the requirement is 1 per 4 seats. Well, they're using the seat method, but I'm not bringing it up for the seat discussion. More to the point, I'm trying to say that they break out a smaller area. And actually, I'm not really seeing any others that broke them out that way.
Well, I think the problem is that you get into the seat requirement, because there's how if something's 1,200 square feet, I agree with you. I mean, I probably, if I had a takeout business, I wouldn't have 1,200 square feet. That wouldn't really make any sense if people are going to come get a pizza and leave. I mean,
you want a small building. Yeah.
And you don't know what that shop is going to, if it's only 1,200 square, if it's up to 1,200 square feet, you don't know that that's always going to be a coffee shop. It might be, right, turn around and become a, you know, become a sit-down restaurant serving tacos or something.
I think the health department has a delineation. Again, they're counting seats, but I believe, if memory serves, that a restaurant such as the old Black Pearl, Papa Joe's, the Coffee House, the Pismo Beach Hotel, 10 seats or less, does not, then the restaurant is not required to provide restrooms because it's considered to be more of a takeout. You stand in line, get your latte and your bagel, and you're out the door.
So well, actually, there is one more example, and it uses a gross square footage. And that's not what we're recommending that you do, but it does give a cutoff. And that's on page 12 of 22, South Pasadena. New restaurants occupying an existing space of more than
20. And there's another restaurant. There's, I think, a Mexican restaurant up there, the same kind of thing. But one of the things that they do is, in some cases, they put table and couple chairs or couple tables in the front of that thing, and that blows it right there.
Yeah.
But they don't have takeout windows.
Yeah, and actually,
no, it's not a window. You just walk
honestly,
inside.
Honestly, today, takeout windows are kind of, they're kind of the thing of the past. I think Brad still has a takeout window. You can,
kind of
they'll
sort.
Pass it through the window
they're
to
it,
you.
They're pass it, yeah.
And I know the El Pismo Inn, there was a restaurant there at one time, a taco place, had great fish tacos. They had a little window, but
even that, you had to walk in. They shut the window down, you had to go inside.
So I don't know that the takeout window is really the criteria that you want to use.
Well, one of the things, let me ask you, one of the things we do not do is when businesses change, I mean, where we demand parking is when the building is constructed. Okay, we don't. If they change from Brad's to
Cocos,
divide it in two and make Cocos or something, we don't go back and require them to supply parking.
Well, we could require them to supply parking or in lieu of fees. I mean, if we change use, if somebody comes in and changes use, or more importantly, has an intensification of use, you deal with that, don't you?
We do. There's a 50% improvement threshold, and then you can get kicked into having have more parking. But it really doesn't.
Tremendous renovation.
It does. And that has occurred before. For instance, the old Eclair Bakery that was in downtown Pismo Beach, the place that's now a surf shop, it used to be the dance
garden.
Hall.
It used to be the Rose Garden.
Rose Garden. I mean, there are a few that over the years, it's like, they're intensifying the use, and we had to look at the value. But that's a whole kind of separate. That's a whole separate section of the code.
Well, we didn't do anything when Sonic's down there, which was a drive-in, changed from that to a restaurant in there. We never did anything about parking at all.
Yeah. Well, let's look at one. I think that getting back to how this impacts. So, say a restaurant. A small restaurant would 400 square feet would probably be pretty much generally takeout. They might have a table or two in there. There's not a lot of room. So if they want to construct that under our current ordinance at $36,000 a space, now is this correct to say they'd be about four spaces to do that? Is that right?
Well, 400 square feet and 75 square feet of dining, waiting, and outdoor area. Out of a 400 square foot takeout place, you figure maybe 25, 30. I'm not as familiar with the restaurant business. I'm thinking 25%. 100 square feet of that is prep area. That leaves you 300 square feet divided by 75.
I think what you've come up with here is actually pretty fair.
About 2.5 cars or something like that.
Right.
So that would be it'd be close to about $80,000 in lieu fees if they couldn't provide parking.
But they would need at least, if you're just a takeout business, you're going to need at least two or three parking spaces.
We have people working there.
What you come up with?
You have people working there, and that's where the employee thing comes in. Is when you have a takeout.
But I mean, just to drive up, park, go inside.
I think the point that Mr. Grant was making though was people aren't driving to Pismo Beach so they can get a taco at the taco joint. They're driving there and they're going to the beach and they happen to be walking by the taco place. But the taco place still has to employ two people, or one person at least, and that one person has to park somewhere, right? So. Mm-hmm.
But again, I think you have to look at the realities of business and you know, if this person's going to sell cups of coffee and they want to come in with a really nice facility that's going to be able to offer coffee to people staying in the hotels or whatever, they're going to instantly look at $72,000 in lieu fees before they do any construction, before they do anything. $72,000. And
I mean, hey, that's what it costs to provide parking for these businesses.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if you're going to build it on the backs of somebody that doesn't even make $72,000 in a year.
Well, what you're saying is that the best use of the land then has increased, and you know you got to put something on that piece of land that's going to pay for it.
I think you also have to look at how many properties anywhere in Pismo Beach are just going to build 400 square feet. They're not.
Well, that's going to.
They're going to build it with, they're going to include it with other commercial uses or residential uses on top, and that's where you can then apply that 15% reduction. And you know,
I think you're going to see if in any of those small buildings is just going to be a change of use from some of the existing small buildings. For example, Dessa's there next to
Respond. And, I really think that we should send along the message that sometimes simple is best, and that, you know, we discuss the aspect of a seating formula and various other things, and it really seemed like this just made the most sense. And I think that what came from that meeting was that, and not just to narrow to identify Splash Cafe, but the reality is that particular instance came before us, and it kind of clarified why we may need to define this a little more. So I think that's a good example, and you mentioned that when you gave us our presentation. So,
I'm comfortable with what staff has recommended.
Okay.
So am I.
Ditto.
Okay. There's one small piece of this amendment that I failed to mention.
Uh-oh. I'm ditto.
And it is somewhat related. If you look on page 2 of 22, and we don't really mention it in the staff report, but under hotels and motels, there's a provision in that zoning code section for parking that says if you're going to have a dining or meeting or convention area with a hotel, you have one parking space for every 5 seats, and now we're back into seats again. And what we're proposing is that you recommend changing that to one space for every 150 square feet of dining area. And that's obviously different than a regular restaurant because people are already there.
Right, because they're already staying at the hotel.
Correct.
Right.
So we're recommending that as well, just as a caveat.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Works for me.
Okay.
Is that clear, though, that applies only for the dining area? I wouldn't want a hotel saying...
dining, meeting, and convention combined with a hotel, motel.
Right.
It's clear how you're separating the space.
Yeah.
You're comfortable with that.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's take the tandem parking then next.
Do you need a
motion on both of those when we're done.
Okay. The second issue was parking on small lots, and this really is kind of a Shell Beach thing, but it does happen in other parts of town. And what we're proposing is that tandem garage parking be permitted if you have a lot that's less than 5,000 square feet, if either the planning commission, when they review a case, or the planning director, when staff is responsible for approval, finds that the existing conditions or terrain of the property present unusual circumstances. So if you have a slope lot, or you have a pie-shaped lot, or something like that, that might warrant it. The tandem space is appropriately located on the site. The use of the tandem space will not jeopardize the health, safety, or welfare of the persons in the neighborhood. The use of tandem spaces will result in a better project than would otherwise be feasible. And any two spaces in tandem are under the same control of one person or group living together. And this is a departure from what you've seen in the code in the past, because currently our code only allows tandem parking for major hotels, like what you saw at your last meeting, the beach walk-in, I believe. And it's never been applied nor allowed to apply to residential property. But there are cases when it is appropriate to have parking in a tandem fashion. So basically you'd be looking at a parking space that instead of your standard 20 by 20 where the cars sit side by side, you could be looking at a 10 by 40 space where they park behind each other.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Just interject. In that scenario, would the car be the end of the car be extending out into the street?
No.
No, okay.
It would have to be in the garage, and that 20-foot setback from the face of the garage to the face of the property line, or typically that's the curb, that would have to remain in place. But if you look at it purely from a design opportunity with some of these smaller lots, right now, you know, if you're taking up two spaces, you know, you're taking 40 feet out of a lot that's maybe, you know, 50 feet wide. Now you're forced to park everything across the entire frontage of the lot. But if you allow tandem, you now have some more usable space for living area on that lower level, which could really change the kind of complexion of the new development you see on some of these smaller lots.
Do you have a much better design on the smaller lots? And I'll go back to two houses that I built on Capistrano Avenue, which were 40 by 67 and a half, so basically a 2,700 square foot lot. Well, you've got 40 foot and you got 5 foot side yard setbacks, so you got 30 feet of building, 20 feet of which is a garage door. So we literally had to take the entrance of the building and put them along in through the setback on the side of the building, and the main entrance of the building is in the middle in the side of the building. Whereas if we could have simply put a 10-foot garage door, because the setback again is 20 foot to the garage door, 15 foot to the building on the 4,750 square foot lots, but certainly lots less than that, then I would definitely like to see it.
Well, we thought that it would just give folks a lot more flexibility if they had an unusual circumstance, especially.
Well, I think you've covered it by having it be an unusual circumstance. I think really all we're doing with this is just giving us a little bit more, be able to put a little more logic to it, and the fact that I agree with Commissioner Varis that, you know, as long as they're not going to stick out in the street, because I mean that's been problems where we've seen some things down in the Shell Beach area where they wanted to do that, but the reality was they're not, the lot didn't permit that, it's going to be in the street.
Another thing that it does do, and this, I think folks in Shell Beach, from what I've heard over the years, are much more conscious of this, is privacy. If you have the depth of one entire side of your house that's in a garage, you're not going to hear your neighbor flushes, you know.
Oh yeah.
And no, I,
turn on the garbage disposal. You mean?
Turn on the garbage disposal.
Life in the village is cozy.
So you know that you know, from a sociological standpoint, that's also something you can consider. Not that. You know.
So no,
I have a problem with F. Okay, on this ordinance that you're changing and the way you've changed it. When you change to a percentage, when you say 20% of the depth of the lot, we've got some, I mean, and this applies to all residential lots because this is general residential. We've got some lots that are 10,000 feet deep on the bluffs and in some other places, and you're saying 20%, not less than 20% of the depth of the lot, which would mean they'd have to set back, let's see, what, 30 feet? And that's not the intent.
I think you could modify this to say not less than 20% of the depth of the lot, not to exceed 20 feet.
There you go. Thank you.
Would that be more satisfactory?
That will fix up my problem.
Carolyn, would these be ministerial approvals, or would this particular thing have to come? I think I'd like to see this come to the Planning Commission.
Well, over the years, the review policy has changed a little bit. There's many lots in Shell Beach that, unless they're in the coastal appeal zone, which is within 300 feet of the ocean, they don't need to come to the commission. They still may be less than 5,000 square feet, but they don't need to come to the commission. A commission many, many years ago absolutely wanted to see them insisted on seeing them, and frankly, it created a very large workload for the commission. They were always reviewing these little houses in Shell Beach.
For the staff and
no, I'm all for ministerial approval. I think that's the greatest thing in the world on those little houses there. I'm just asking a question regarding the tandem parking.
Well, we're recommending that you allow staff, when they have the ministerial discretion anyway, to use these findings and these guidelines to make their decision.
Isn't that the purpose? Otherwise, the applicant would have to go before the Planning Commission for a variance request.
And we're trying to eliminate that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think you've got pretty clear requirements. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a lot of interpretation. I mean, it's going to be pretty cut and dry. So I'm comfortable with the staff reviewing those.
One thing I'd like to clarify, because I said a minute ago that the back of the garage would still be the 20 feet from the property line. If this is revised, it might not be 20 feet. If you have a lot that's 67 feet deep, 20% of that is 13.5. So modifying F up above here would now shorten that driveway. Okay. Well, unless you have a 10,000 square foot lot.
Well, do you think it's necessary to put in a provision that won't be permitted if it exceeds into the moves into the driveway or the sidewalk? Or I mean, are you fearful that this change will cause that?
No,
so we still
really.
Have enough room?
Not really.
Okay.
We believe so.
Well, and you'd look at that anyway. It's going to come before you, so obviously if that's going to happen, you wouldn't grant it.
Right.
Correct?
I still don't see it as being, and I'm a big advocate for this, so I'm surprised that I would say this, but I don't really see it as a necessity on Palomar, on Moro, on the lots with the 4,750 square foot lots. I don't see that, because I built there. Well, those little lots, they're hard to deal with, and that tandem parking not only makes the neighborhood look better, it makes the house more functional, but that's not the case on a 4,750 square foot lot. So personally, I'd like to see on lots less than 4,750 rather than less than 5,000.
Well, a lot that's 4,750 versus 5,000, you're talking about a 10-foot difference in lot width, correct? Standard lot width.
Five foot in length, yeah, certainly.
Right. But I'm thinking width more to the point in that if you're trying to avoid seeing...
I was to speak on the tandem parking. I think that it is important to consider tandem parking, and whether the issues come back to the Planning Commission as some sort of a review process, but not necessarily a variance process, would be very helpful. There are circumstances, and I've run across them over the years, where it would have been very helpful to have the ability to put a tandem parking spot in and not go for a variance. Homeowners are very reluctant to roll the dice sometimes on a situation that necessarily hasn't been approved before. I understand Commissioner Burns in terms of some of the lots being larger and such. I do also recognize that by having tandem parking, the object is to get cars off of the street. The object is to get them under shelter and off the street. And whether it's tandem, whether it's side by side, maybe in the future they might be stacked. I think that just opens up a homeowner to more options that may give a better front facade to a residence. And in terms of the argument, it's always been against tandem parking, that the accessibility of the first car in, getting back out, etc. I don't think that's necessarily an issue. There's other options on things like that when it comes down to design, is that there could be a little wider driveway, a 16-foot wide driveway, and the main garage comes in, a car could park off to the side. Cars could come in. You could actually get more loading in on something like that versus a standard two-car garage. I've come across it in the past and currently, where somebody has put a tremendous amount of money into their residence, maybe fixing it up interior-wise, exterior-wise, with no intention of adding on later on down the road, and the foreseeable comes in to where maybe another person comes in and purchases it and is faced with the fact that if you want to do anything to this structure, you have to demolish it. And I think that's kind of a situation that perhaps is where it should come in front of the commission to make that determination. Maybe not a blank check as far as all tandem parking's garages are allowed, but at least maybe the option of getting it to the commission on some sort of review process. It is not a variance where you have to go through the hardship, the special privileges, et cetera, et cetera. And I just think that it helps the homeowners. It helps a guy like us putting designs together to have just one more option to get the cars off the street.
Well, wouldn't the current procedure, if an applicant wasn't comfortable with what the staff had decided, wouldn't they be able to come before the commission and public comment and
appeal
say,
it, yeah.
I'd like to have you guys hear this, and, you know, I think if we felt like that it was worthy, then we would hear it. I don't think we've been too reluctant to take an item and when somebody comes in public comment and wants to hear it.
It's been, I could be mistaken, it's been my experience in the past that basically tandem parking, we get shut down right at the door as far as even proposing it.
Well, this would allow like you to do it under all these findings, and the Planning Commission, both the Planning Commission and the Planning Director, whoever approved it, would have to use these same findings. So
I think that would be great. You know, if staff had a problem saying we really don't feel comfortable on this one, bring it before the Planning Commission, that would be fine.
Yeah, I think that's what would happen, because basically that's what we're here for. I mean, if you disagree with the findings, say, well, I think there are findings for me to be able to have tandem parking, you can come before the Planning Commission and say, I'd like to have this body hear this, because there's some disagreements, and then we would hear that.
Right, and I think that would be a fair alternative and give the homeowner a way out.
Well, I think that alternative, I mean, that does exist. And I think that you would, and with this added depth to this now, we're probably going to, you know, there'll be some real guidelines as far as how this can happen and not happen, too.
But if I'm correct, it would not be a variance.
No.
Correct. No, it would fit within what, you know, we'd actually be changing it, so there wouldn't be a variance.
Perfect. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
It would basically have the same effect, though, if this was changed to 4,750 square feet.
But our standard lot size in this city is 5,000. That's why that's in there.
Well, I understand that.
And
but it would have the
anything
same
else is non-conforming lot size.
It would have the same effect.
Yes. Okay, let's hear it. We've got it over to the public here.
Thanks. Lenny Grant, LGA Architecture in Pismo Beach. I don't really have too much of a opinion about the 4,750 square foot lots, but and this isn't part of the discussion, but it would be nice in multifamily projects to have the option as well to go to a tandem parking spot, because it quite often dictates how much density you can get on a lot. So just in the future, if you could.
Well, actually, the preface to this says driveway and access to parking spaces for residential zones. So this would apply to all residential zones.
All residential zones.
So
the R2 and the R3 zones. And
that'd be great. That really
would
help
apply
us
there
on those types of projects. So thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Use the tools that they have been studying and doing for years so as to give a city a real exciting look. And this does give us an opportunity to, in fact, design properly by reducing this monster that is a vehicle that we are forced to have to use less space, and give us an opportunity to give us a good facade to the street. Plus, this, in fact, gives us an opportunity to show off the ocean that we have, the views that we have, and a lot of the things that we would like to be able to do, except we've been forced to have to give our ability to create to a vehicle. Okay, so don't attempt to design everything for us. Give us rules, but don't design it for us, because it really does create a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close it to the public.
I had one more comment. I just want to clarify something. Going back to F on page 3 of 22, residential garage entrances fronting on the lot line shall be located a distance of not less than 20% of the depth of the lot, not to exceed 20 feet. I have to be mindful of some of the lots on Boker Street that are maybe only 50 feet deep, and I think you're going to want a provision in here saying under, you know, having an absolute low-end limit as well. I don't think you want a driveway any smaller than six, maybe 10 feet or I think 10 feet would be probably a good number.
That's what we're doing there, isn't it, on Boker Street generally?
Well, no, because the parking has to sit back 20 feet now. But the way this is written, it gives you some flexibility. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that you have not to exceed 20 feet, nor can it be less than 10 feet.
What's the standard automobile is 15 feet, is it not?
I don't know what it is.
I think a standard automobile is, of course, when you go and rent a standard car now, sure, it's a little compact.
You know? But you can pick a number. I mean,
on Boker Street, don't we normally wind up handing out variances on that?
10% is what we've done.
I'm sorry. But yeah, we absolutely need to take Boker Street into consideration without question. It's an anomaly unto itself.
I think is what I'm getting at, Carolyn. I think we should at least use some sort of a standard car.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I don't know what that might be, whether it's 12 feet.
Well,
we shouldn't have to design it for a big, you know, 2,500 pickup truck or something like that.
We use your 58 Caddy.
Carolyn, do we have to use a specific distance? Can C fulfill that requirement? The use of a tandem space will not jeopardize the health, safety, or welfare of persons in the neighborhood, i.e. that the end of the vehicle cannot extend out into the street?
That's a good point.
That's very good.
You could just add on to that.
That's a good solution.
Yeah. Well, would those conditions then, the A through E, then also apply to G1? Because right now they don't.
Right now they don't, no. The requirement for these findings is if you have a lot larger than 5,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a lot smaller than
20% is fine. Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't work if it's 120 feet or if it's...
Right.
Or if it's...
I like the findings for both of those conditions, G1 and G2. And I think also on the finding, after finding D, you need to have the word and, so that it's clear that all five findings have to be made.
Oh, okay. Where would you put that, and?
Just,
I think you would just say on single-family residential lots, instead of taking that 5,000 square foot threshold.
Sure.
5,000 square foot threshold in there.
Just take out 5,000 square
And then D to E, you would need either comma and, semicolon and, to make it clear that A through E have to each be found.
It's inclusive, all of them.
Right.
Well, I think you would just take out number two. It would just say on single family residential lots when the planning commissioner or director finds that, and then these would all apply in either case. Would that work?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, see, right now you have A through E,
mm-hmm,
but it's not clear that a single finding justifies it or that all five findings have to be made. So I'm saying join D and E with an and.
Okay.
You see what I'm talking about?
I mean, you could put semicolons after each
correspondence, other than what we had for the projects we heard tonight?
No, but I do have another item.
Okay.
Under director's report after you guys talk.
You know, one thing I'd like to mention, too, since Planning Commission comes first, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, it does on the agenda anyway. I'm not saying necessarily in priorities. But Commissioner Arion also mentioned this to me. I think it would be appropriate for us to hear, and I think we have pretty much in the past, these conceptual reviews at the after the public hearings.
Okay.
Because those tend to be a little bit more more opinions given, a little more discussion. And usually not the benefit. Sometimes I guess the public would be involved in that.
Sure.
But I think we've had those in the past. I think mostly business items occurred after the public hearing item. I think that would probably be good in the future if we can.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Because those people came to get their projects approved.
Right.
They paid money to get it done, and they're ready to go build something.
Well, I think just the whole the natural flow of the meeting, too, it seems like that, you know, when we have they're a little less formal and, you know, we're able to have a discussion a little longer then.
And tonight was a great example of somebody that sat through quite a bit to say hi and bye.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That's a very good point, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So you have some director's report?
Yes, I did. Your last item you got a staff report, but the attachment was not included, unfortunately, and I apologize for that. I did make a copy of the attachments. This item is a memo noting to you that when the 1998 zoning code was developed, I put it on the dais, and it does have the attachment in this case. When the 1998 zoning code was developed, it included design guidelines for single-family homes, multifamily homes, and commercial development, which is really sorely needed because it just makes it a lot easier for the commission, without the benefit of an architectural review commission ahead of you, to kind of walk through some guidelines and some criteria on which to judge projects. Many cities do have architectural review boards, and it does extend the life of the process. And in the past, the city here has found that they've wanted to use the Planning Commission in the architectural review capacity rather than having a board. And so that's why in 98 these design guidelines were developed. I'm not going to go through all of them, and because you didn't get them ahead of the meeting, I'm not going to ask you to look at them or comment on them. We are going to put it on the next agenda and request that you read through them and consider at your next meeting developing a policy resolution that you will use these to assist you in review of new development and additions to existing developments. They will not be adopted per se as part of our LCP, because that's an entirely different process, but there's no reason why you can't use them as guidelines.
Okay. So yeah, I think that'll be good for our next, and that'll be a business item, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this correspondence that I have here really isn't to the issue of anything that we've considered. Are you familiar with these? These are back on Toucan Terrace.
Well, we're not hearing that.
Well, I know.
Well, I think correspondence, actually, I think that maybe we had to clarify what this is on the agenda. My understanding of correspondence has always been that if there was something that came through, because I usually ask staff for any correspondence that's come, I'm thinking that that's not on past projects or projects that are related to what we've already had in our packet. It's letters that have come to you before we've been able to receive anything. Is that correct?
Or? Yes.
So it's basically trying to address, is there a piece of correspondence that you have that we don't have?
No.
But I mean, is that what that item is on the agenda for?
Well, it's on here because it came like the day of or around the time of your last meeting, but we didn't get it to you.
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah. Would you prefer that we hold these until
the
meeting time?
I would think that we should put in the minutes that we received these two letters concerning the Toucan Terrace development.
Okay.
And
we can do that
one
right
by Garth Bullock, and another one by the board of directors of the association, Toucan Terrace Association.
Okay. And they'll also
at least they know we've gotten these, we see them.
Okay. They'll also go in the project file and
okay, that's fine.
See them again. That's a good point.
Okay. Anything further? All right. We'll adjourn the meeting.